Welcome to the Practice Podcast, a show created by lawyers to help lawyers in life and business without all the complicated lawyer language. Let's welcome Bast Amron founders and your hosts, Jeff Bast and Brett Amron.
Hi, Jeff.
Brett, how are you?
I'm great. It is Friday.
I was thinking, should we ask Nelson a question today?
Oh, I think we should.
I don't know. All right. Happy Friday.
How annoying is it to sit here and listen to me and you talk?
I don't know. He's giving us a dirty look.
He is. But move on.
Hard to say. All right. Brett, what do you think is Nelson's favorite movie? I was going to ask you yours, but no. What's your favorite movie?
Nelson's favorite movie is probably beyond my comprehension, given how smart and intellectual he is.
Right.
I probably wouldn't have any idea.
I'm going Top Gun for Nelson. Something like that.
No, or maybe... How about Runner's High?
The Martian or something like that.
Yeah.
Something...
Maybe.
Runner's High? You have a favorite movie? I always think that's a tough question, too, because like, what's the first movie that comes to your mind is really the question.
That's funny you said Top Gun. Honestly, when I was a kid was like...
You loved that.
I just love that movie. Yeah. I mean, set aside Tom Cruise's, you know. But yeah, I love that movie. I tend to like mindless movies because I like to just sort of let everything go and just enjoy the entertainment.
I'm with you.
I do enjoy the Marvel movies for the same reason.
They're just entertaining. It's fun. I do it with the boys
and stuff. So, you know, nothing intellectual, which is pretty consistent with my personality.
On that theme of movies, like I love the Guardians of the Galaxy movies.
They're really fun.
They're action-packed and they're funny.
Well, if you watch Iron Man, it's just funny. And, you know, anyway, I thought well done most of the movies.
But Nelson, you want to share yours?
Shout it out, man. What's yours?
Just yell it.
Shout it out.
Yell it. Say it. Come on. We can't get him to talk. Come on.
Say it.
People are dying to hear from you.
He's about to.
Say it.
Their favorite movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is?
The Rogue Warrior.
Road Warrior. Okay, all right, okay. Good. We were in the right. We were in the dystopian future.
Not to add one, Shawshank Redemption for
Shawshank,
me.
Shawshank, also a winner. I'm curious to hear our guest. He's sitting there quietly. But I would say
mine's a classic. I have two. It depends on the genre.
Okay.
Godfather, to me, I could watch it anytime it comes on. I can't not watch it.
Yeah.
And then I would say, because I love comedies, Animal House is
nice. Oh my God. Yeah.
There's not a wasted scene in that movie.
I'm with you.
It's excellent.
I'm with you. I would go, for me, it's probably Fast Times, you know, if
right.
And we're talking about comedies. All right. Maybe we should tell people who this mysterious.
No, I think we should just go and do this the whole time.
We now know exactly. That unlike, you know, we're not like smartless. I mean, everyone knows that they've read the podcast description. So they know they came to this episode because they know who you are.
Well, interestingly,
I guess Smartless has the same thing.
And they actually did that. They said, you know, it's interesting because we're doing this and, you know, you have to guess who the other two have to guess. And the listener already knows because when it's put out, obviously the name is on there.
So that's still fun for them. Anyway, can I guess today? Our guest today is Elliot Basner.
Oh, I was going to say that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's, okay. Elliot is an attorney. And the former vice president and associate general counsel of Chewy Inc., Chewy, the pet product company. He has been with that company since March 2017. So I guess he was there from 2017 to 2024. He also served as Chewy's interim general counsel, where he led the legal risk and corporate responsibility team, overseeing all aspects of Chewy's legal, compliance, risk, insurance, and ESG functions. He has more than 25 years of legal experience with wide-ranging expertise in marketing, intellectual property, technology, commercial transactions. I'm not going to read this list. Just goes on and on. It's like a page of skills.
We'll add him to the show notes.
Yeah. But he previously held several leadership roles at Diageo, the alcoholic beverage company, including senior vice president and associate general counsel, where he spent 15 years. And he has a bachelor's degree in environmental economics. I'm interested about that. From the University of Michigan. Congratulations on your national win.
Go Blue. Yeah, there you go.
And JD from Cardozo School of Law. Welcome,
thank
Elliot.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Okay, just kind of threw that at the end. And JD from Cardozo School of Law.
Cardozo,
well,
great school.
When you compare it to Michigan and the national championship.
Well, that's true, right? So, I agree.
So I get it.
Welcome, Elliot. It's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all.
Let's dive right into the economics.
Yeah, you want to talk about environmental economics?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. At Michigan, I didn't really know what I wanted to study. I probably look back and still really don't know what I really wanted to. I had an interest in econ. I was good at it. I had like a knack for it. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really just want that. And then at Michigan, they have a program where you could actually create your own major. You got to write a whole thing up for it, and you go to some board of, you know, whatever. I was in the LSNA Literature, Science, and Arts School. You go in front of a board there, and you pitch your whatever your major is.
That's awesome.
I think that's how it worked. And then they either approve it or not. So they approved it. And it was, looking back, it was actually pretty, I'm actually impressed with what I thought.
Yeah, you were, I was very forward-thinking. You were ahead of your time, right?
Yeah, really.
This was,
yeah.
What, I mean, I think we're around the same age.
89 to 93.
89. Right. Yeah. So it's sometime in that period, yeah, you were thinking about environmental economics. That's,
yeah,
cool.
And
is it what it sounds like? I mean, what is, you know?
It was really, there were one or two classes that probably merged the economics and the environmental aspect of it. But it was really like probably more of an econ major with an environmental minor, mm-hmm, is probably really that's what it was.
Can you make your pitch right now to us as like if Brett and I were the board? I'm kidding.
Well, now it's 40 years, now it's an easy one. Now you got the whole world looking at
that's
it.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And then here in Miami Beach.
And we're still not doing a great job.
Or Miami, it's, yeah, even more important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So you go environmental economics, law school, and then did you go straight to in-house or did you practice as
I took a year actually in between college and law school. I needed a break.
Smart.
So I was on a program I found called OTSMA, which was...
What's it called?
OTSMA. It was a year in Israel where the federation of the city where you live will send you over. It was like me and about 120 other people my age. And you lived and worked on a kibbutz for 3-4 months. Then you had a choice of where you wanted to... They had, mm-hmm, like a million choices of where you wanted to work and live. I ended up in an Ethiopian immigration center.
Wow.
In Kiryat Gat, which is like an hour south of Tel Aviv.
Wow.
Which was unbelievably fascinating.
What
and
an amazing
really cool
experience
and wild.
It had to be.
Yeah. It was, if you don't know, they, in the late 80s, mm-hmm, Israel went into Ethiopia in one night and airlifted thousands, a whole community of Ethiopian Jews who I guess were being persecuted. So they somehow got in there one night with all these planes, airlifted them out and brought them back to Israel. And then they put them in these temporary camps. Mm-hmm. And what happens is the temporary camps became more than temporary, particularly for the older population who had a harder time assimilating.
Yeah.
And so me and 3 other people ended up living in the camp.
Wow.
In the center, which was great. It was...
What an experience.
It was amazing. Like, first of all, the kids were just happy to like have anybody... Like, they were outside our door the minute we woke up to the minute we went to bed. Yes. They just wanted to play and hang out.
That's amazing.
And then...
As kids should.
Yeah,
as should.
Were you able to communicate with these people? I mean, how did that happen?
We tried.
I mean, the language obviously is a huge barrier, right? And then...
You tried. I mean, my Hebrew wasn't great.
Right.
Someone... who was in our group much better Hebrew, so that helped.
But did the Ethiopian Jews that came over, did they speak Hebrew?
They spoke Hebrew, mm-hmm, or at least understood. They spoke it probably because of the religious aspect. Like if I go to temple today, like I'll know how to read, but I have no idea what it means for the most part.
Right, right.
They seem to know more than let's say I did.
Okay.
But they had all the same holidays, all the, you know, everything. Yeah. It was just really wild to see that.
Before you did that, did you know you were going to law school? You were said
I had applied to law school and deferred
school and then you decided to do this thing. And
yes,
was there any thought about becoming an immigration attorney? Was that, I didn't know.
What type of law I wanted to practice at the time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
No, that wasn't anything to do with it. I just wanted to get a year away from school. And clear my head. And this was, I didn't have to pay to go over. So it was, free in a sense. And I'd never been to Israel. So I was like, all right, let's.
That's great.
It was great. It was great.
I'm hoping if my kids are listening and they listen to every single episode, I hope they do that. Something like that. I want them to take time and go and travel and have experiences like that.
It was great. It was amazing. So, and then I'm convincing one of my oldest son to go his junior next year to go abroad, and which he looks like he's going to do for the same reasons.
Yeah.
Like I didn't do that in college.
Yeah.
So this is my version of that.
So can you think back, I know it was a while ago, but can you think back to either an indelible image that sort of stuck in your head from that time or something that changed in you from when you started to when you finished your time there?
Whoa.
Yeah.
That was a good
question. We had a lot of amazing experiences. But the first most amazing experience was within a few days of being in Israel and you're meeting all these new people you're going to spend a year with. I think it was in Jerusalem. It was like the first couple of days and they're trying to like show you around and everything. And that was when they announced the initial peace accord with Rabin and Arafat.
Right, right.
It was like literally within a few days of being there.
Wow.
So there was this like real excitement
historic,
and euphoria that, wow, something really good might happen here, which you see what's going
so
on
close.
Now.
We're so close.
So close. So that year was actually a very exciting year to be there because mm-hmm. everything was coming out about that.
Wow. That's yeah. amazing.
Amazing. I feel like we could spend the whole time podcast on this topic, but that's really cool. I'm glad you shared that. So you come back. You go to law school and then yep. did you start out in-house or?
No, I started, I was at two path. Different law firms. The first law firm was a firm, Fish & Richardson,
okay.
which is a national intellectual property firm.
Where was that?
In New York. I was living in New York at the time. So I was there and really good firm. What happened is there was this guy, Tony Fletcher, who was like one of the deans of trademark law. And someone I knew that he needed an associate. He was moving over to Fish from another firm. So I got my resume in there and inevitably got an offer.
Of course you did.
Of course. So, well, it was weird. The guy was in his early 60s and I was a first year coming out of law school, you know, nothing.
Right.
Which was great for me. I learned a lot, but I imagine for him it had to be not as much
fun. Why did I do this, right?
Like, why didn't I hire like a fifth year?
Right.
And it was great. So I learned a tremendous amount. And he literally wrote a book every year on trademark law that wow. everybody in the trademark, U.S. trademark profession, they would show up at this conference every year and they put his speech at the end so that everybody would stay to the end and everybody and yeah because he knew wow. everything so and I helped him a little bit right
you helped write the book you I wrote the book on trademark that's good
yeah well did just
you,
a little there, bit
did you at least get a mention in the notes or anything
I think
like
I got
that?
A thank okay. you out of it
so I think we need to go back to the introduction in production here
right
and we need
and
to
right,
add
he
that
wrote
in
the book
he I literally oh, wrote
this
the book
guy wrote the book
I don't want to take Tony's thunder but of course I did everything no he
anyway so a couple
so I was there for a couple of years and then I moved to a firm called Darby & Darby which was another, it was an intellectual property law firm.
Right.
At the time, it was just New York, but they'd been around for, I think, over 100 years. They were pretty well regarded. So I was there for another 2 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then that's when I moved in-house to Diageo.
Now, we're always curious about people's path. And so what caused you to move to in-house? You're practicing yeah. law, you have the specialty, things seem to be going well. You know,
it's a good question.
Why'd you?
I really didn't like private practice. At the time, I was doing a lot of litigation and discovery. And I just, one, I didn't really love it. And two, as a result, I don't think I was very good at it.
Right.
I'm not like a natural brief writer. Like writing briefs was like, it was hard for
painful,
me.
Painful, right? You do it, but
like I'm very good at writing a short email to whomever and you know, getting the point
you're ahead of Twitter.
Exactly.
Very short sentences, choppy.
So best. Yeah, 144 characters
that's
is
right.
more
that's
than enough
pretty,
for me.
Right.
So anyway, it wasn't for me. So then I was actually looking at the time of going either in-house or out of law altogether. Mm. I figured I was going to work hard, which I always do. You know, there's a little more risk reward of staying in Wall Street. So I was looking at both. And then at the same time, it was right after actually 9/11. So it was hard in the market, in the financial markets. It was harder to get a role there at the time. But I'd gotten an offer both at Diageo at the same time as this. It was a private equity type, not private equity, it was a hedge fund type business. But they also sold their research. So the job was 100% commission, no salary, no benefits to sell the research. Mm. And I was like, all right, I'll do it. If I'm going to try to go to Wall Street, this will be an in. And if I don't like it a year, I'll parlay it into something else. And then anybody who knew me was like, you're being an idiot. You know, try Diageo. You spent all the years of law school and, you know, blah, blah, blah. At least try it. And I was like, no, because now like I'm younger. I don't even think I had maybe either one was on the way, like first kid or whatever. It's like, now if I'm going to do it, let's do it. So I was going to do it. And I called the guy who owns the fund and he just was a real jerk on the phone. Like, I was like, wait, I'm going to leave my future in this guy's hands.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, I'm not going to go for this guy.
So he might have saved you. That phone call might have saved you because.
Yeah, I wouldn't be down
gave
here.
A little warning.
Yeah,
you didn't,
yeah.
you hadn't put it together. And sometimes, you know, we always say it's hard to see the picture when you're in the frame. And so everyone else is telling you, this is the right position. And then he finally told you.
In his way. It wasn't being very nice. So I was like, all right, so I'll try the Diageo thing, but I'll keep looking in Wall Street. And I ended up really liking going in-house.
Yeah.
It was much more my skill set a lot better.
And your personality too.
And my personality.
No brief writing.
No brief writing. Or I could review briefs.
Exactly.
There were litigations and maybe mark them up. But I didn't have to sit and draft them from the...
So I just want to go back for a second.
Yeah,
before Diageo, before, you know, because I'm always curious. curious as well about how people get in certain practice areas, right? Sometimes it's like, well, I just kind of found something because I knew somebody, or man, I really had a passion for this. You were an environmental economics major and then ended up going to law school, and then found your way into patent, trademark, IP. Like, how does that
happen? Cardozo had a really great, they were a young law school at the time, but one of their strengths was their IP, and they had a great law journal and great professors. That was a real focus of theirs.
Okay.
So I got sort of interested and learned about it there.
Did you go there for that reason?
No. I just
I didn't even know. Did you know that?
No.
I didn't know they had a specialty in, like, you know,
back then. Back then, I probably still do, but yeah, back then that was like, they had like a few areas that were like, they were really focusing on to, you know, try to make a name for themselves.
Yeah.
And it was that. It was the Innocence Project with Barry Scheck. He was at Cardozo.
Oh, did it start at Cardozo?
I don't know if it started there. I think it might have, but he might still be there. But that's
cool.
That was really, and then when I was there during the OJ trial.
Right.
So it got a lot of attention at that time because he and his partner were.
94 or something, somewhere.
That was like, let's see.
No, it was my 95. No, because it was my first year of law school.
Oh, wow.
And I remember watching the verdict. In a big room with everybody.
Yeah.
And there's being diametrically opposed reactions to the verdict being read.
That was, you know, that's something you remember. Like,
I remember it. I remember it vividly.
I was clerking, so I remember watching it in the TV in the courthouse.
It was so funny. I mean, what a time that was, right?
I mean, it was crazy. It was the most famous trial of all time.
Yeah.
Probably still.
So we don't have those moments anymore because it's all right here on our phones.
There,
you get the instantaneous updates,
right? Right. Yeah.
So even the ruling today out of Georgia, right? Like that came immediately, came this morning, like super quick. And
it was immediately on TV and everything online.
Yep.
So I want to, since we're going backwards, you're practicing law in IP litigation department in New York. What kind of hours? Like how many, what are you billing? You're billing how many hours a year? Do you remember?
I think it was around 2,000 hours.
Oh, that's not,
wasn't awful. It was, they weren't like monster big law firms that would,
and
do the corporate thing where in there. Right. Back in the printers, and they would go to the printers and everything. They were more medium sized to small.
Right.
Or more medium sized. It wasn't as killer. It was, you know, you worked hard, you were there at nights, but it wasn't killing you.
So you make, and how was the transition for you? You go in-house, it's totally different. Obviously, no billable hours, but tell us about the transition. Well,
that's one of the best things you realize right away, is that you don't have to, you know, write down your time. For me, it was great because you have the same background. Mm-hmm. Right, the legal background, the IP marketing background, but it's a very different job. So all of a sudden you're working with all the different business teams that you're supporting. So it was the marketing teams, the innovation teams, the commercial team, sales teams, whatever. And for me, what I love about being in-house still is you're part of something and you're helping, you have an immediate impact and you're helping grow it. Mm-hmm. And then your decision has, like, your neck is on the line, which I enjoy that. I like being in the middle of it, in the heat of it, and the challenges, trying to figure out a solution and going and taking on risk, whatever it is. So to me, that fit my personality and my skill set a lot better.
You also have authority. People are looking to you and saying, hey, can we do this? Or how do we do this?
Yeah, which is actually weird because when you're at a law firm, right, everybody, most people there are lawyers or paralegals and much more senior to you, and you don't recognize that. All of a sudden I go in,
you're
in
the house.
And then everybody's like looking at you and they're like, oh, he's the lawyer. Like,
right.
And I don't recognize that.
Right.
Like, I don't realize that
it's very common
look at
for
me
us.
Like that.
Right. Right. You're looking around going, are they talking to me?
Yeah. In a law firm, you're one of.
Right.
And there you're now, just the one.
Right.
Yeah.
So it took me a while to get used to the fact that people actually viewed me in a category that, and then partly because maybe they were nervous to come to me, which to me is like, I don't understand that.
Right.
So I feel like sometimes in business, and I'm curious your take on it, being in-house, obviously I've not been in-house, but being in-house, being the only lawyer, you know, a lot of business people view lawyers as like, man, they're going to tell me why I can't do this, you know, as opposed to, yeah, we're in this. Like, we're the business people. We're putting this together and blah, blah, blah. And okay, let's go ask the lawyer. You know, I mean, did you feel that? Or like, did you feel any pressure to be like, okay, I'm not saying no, but here's what we need to do to make sure we can get it done.
Yeah, you learn early a couple of things. That, first of all, depending on who the, whatever the person is in the company, some people are very good. They love working with lawyers. They've had good experiences. And there are other people who either are scared to or hate it.
Yeah.
And you sort of just had, you'll figure out very quickly who's who.
Right.
And then you got to sort of make sure you're still working with them and they're involved where you should be. What I think I'm pretty good at is the commercial aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
So always trying to figure out a solution or at least saying, understanding, hey, we could live with this risk. Don't worry about it. You know, even right. if it hits us, we'll deal with it. It's not right, a big right. deal. So I think if anybody in-house is good at that, then I think people are more likely to go, oh, it's not an issue. They're not like, oh, we got to go to that lawyer who you know is always giving us a hard time. You know, at times you got to say no.
You're practical, right.
Yeah.
Which is good. People want to know that they can do something, and it's not about risk elimination. It's about risk mitigation, right? It's understanding the risks and evaluating them.
We should.
Yeah, and if you look at it, if there's an amazing idea that could, all of a sudden you can make $100 million, but you might have a $5 million or litigation.
Right.
All right. That's probably pretty good.
Yeah, we'll take that. We'll take that risk. Yeah.
Yeah. But if it's a horrible idea and you're going to get, you know, big class action.
Tank the company. Like, nah, I don't think
that's
SEC
violation, you know. There's certain things you can't do, right? You can't mess around with the SEC, anything criminal, but everything else, let's talk about it. We'll figure it out.
Right. Fantastic.
I just want to note and drop a pin in the, I love the risk
mitigation.
Risk mitigation. Yes. I love that.
Yeah. Because you're trying to get
another, right? Brilliant, brilliant.
Right. Can we note this moment on the record that Brett admired something I said?
Oh, I mean, it's minute by minute. I mean,
what's happening here?
You have a room filled with quotes.
What's happening here? Our time.
We have a little clock that Nelson shares with us.
It's like we're at some other part of the world.
So
it's the time plus 8 minutes.
So I'm sorry to take a detour here, but we have a little clock that Nelson runs so that we know how far into the show we have. But now I have a little piece of paper next to it that says plus 8 minutes.
Yeah. I wonder if there's one. So I wonder if there's a piece that for every minute.
It means we didn't start the clock until 8 minutes into the show, but how do you know that 8 minute piece?
It's Nelson.
Nelson's looking at me like I know everything.
That's right. That's okay. Right.
All right. Anyway,
he's a road warrior.
Do you have any advice for, you know, lawyers who are practicing and they're just not happy, kind of like you were?
Yeah.
That are thinking about in-house. Is there anything you learned, a lesson learned, or something that you'd share?
First, you got to figure out whether if you're not liking your job, you know, maybe understand why. Like, do you not like it? Like, if you don't love being a lawyer, then going in-house, I'm not sure that's necessarily going to help you.
Because you're still a lawyer.
You're still a lawyer. It's still an important part of your job.
Right.
Exactly.
So I think you got to figure that out. What's really making you not happy about your work? I always recommend that people don't go. It's hard to get a job out of law school in-house.
Right.
Most, because if you're in a company, you don't have time to really train someone like a law firm can.
Right.
A law firm does an amazing job at that. And I always recommend, so it's hard, but even if you can, I'd recommend people at least get 4 or 5 years in-house, I mean, at a law firm before they even think about going in-house. Because the training you get is phenomenal. And you understand, if you're doing litigation, how that's really going to impact a business or whatever you might be doing, or an agreement. Like, you learn how to draft it. You learn, you know, the ins and outs. And to me, I think it's a great experience. And if you're going in-house, try to find an industry that you're going to enjoy. Like alcohol?
Like is alcohol. That like alcoholic beverages?
Yeah, so my friends might say, is that meant to be?
Is that
I went to Diageo?
Alcohol and pet food, but, like pet supplies.
Yeah,
and
sounds, you know, it's consumer products, which to me are fun because you're creating them and they're tangible. They're in the stores or bars, restaurants in my case.
Mm-hmm.
So like and then I went to e-commerce and retail, and there was the pet industry. But the whole e-commerce and technology and retail was new to me. And, and I purposely wanted e-commerce. So, and because it was just, you know, it was just, it's not, back then it was so important. Even now, it's such a critical part of everything anybody does today.
Yeah.
So, and it's just fun. Again, it's tangible. Like, people, when they hear I'm at Chewy, oh, we love Chewy. They get the food to us within, you know, a short time. They have amazing selection. The customer service is unbelievable. So you feel very much part of that. And, and I am. I'm very much part of how a lot of the things that happen to get people the products.
Well, I'm going to say thank you as a frequent customer of Chewy, for example, because, oh my goodness.
Yeah. But I think you keyed in on an important component here, and that is that at some point you became part of the process. You felt important. to the process. So like when you're adding value, but your input is valuable. When you're a junior associate and you're, you know, on a team of 8 junior associates and there's all these partners, like you're not sure that you feel as important to the process. But now when you're at the table and the business people and they're trying to make a decision and they're all looking to you for advice, your input is valued. And I think that's something that maybe a lot of junior lawyers don't appreciate, that as they climb the ranks, they will, you know, they may achieve that on a certain level, but the in-house is obviously a little different.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, whether it was law firm or even in-house, when I was a younger attorney, it was hard to comprehend that what I was saying was really important to me. Like, why are they coming to me? I didn't feel, compared to like more senior lawyers, like necessarily worthy. Like, what do I know?
You weren't valued.
Where if I look back, I mean, as time, you get more confident, you have more experience, and now I, you know, will speak up, and whether it's legal or not legal, I'll say my piece. Whereas earlier on, like if you're talking about advice, like the more you feel comfortable doing that, the better you're going to be, and then the more people are going to want your input.
Right.
So that took time to learn that.
Right. And also just the idea of being part of something like that. I think at business in the in-house job, you had a better understanding of like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Like we're trying to accomplish, we have this campaign or whatever it is we want to accomplish. Whereas if you're asked to write, hey, can you research this issue? Yeah, they might tell you it's for a motion to dismiss, but like, what's the case? Why? How important is it to the client? What's the, you know, the big picture? Why is any of this, does any of this matter? And so I think the idea of understanding, you know, your role and the importance of your role is really important for employees.
In house, it's not important that I'm right. But what's important is that I'm helping grow the business. And if you look at it from a personal standpoint, take away my wanting to do a good job, I'm only getting bonus if the company is growing.
Right.
So from a financial standpoint, I always tell people on the business side that I'm working with, I'm bonus the same as you. So I want to make this happen. So if I'm saying this isn't maybe the way to go, there's probably a good reason. Like I think this is maybe going to hurt us, or I don't think it's long-term sustainable or whatever it is. And then we'll figure out how to do it. So don't just think because it's your idea, it's the best idea. Hmm. It might be pretty good. Maybe, who knows? But there might be some issues that you didn't think about, and let's figure that out.
So it's always interesting because, you know, we talk about here the sort of the difference between working at a firm, and there's so many differences working in-house versus working at a firm. But I mean, you can be a senior partner in a firm. To me, that's equivalent almost to being a general counsel, right? Because you're the one at the top of the food chain. There may be other lawyers working underneath you, even if you're in-house. But I see sort of the benefits of being in-house more business-oriented. But sometimes when we talk to in-house people, they're super focused on, and they always say, well, the client. I mean, do you ever find yourself when you're in-house thinking, you are the client.
Yeah.
You're just a lawyer who's part of the business as opposed to, well, that's my client. And, you know, that's how they think.
Yeah. A lot of people refer to as clients. I personally don't like to do that because then that all of a sudden it makes it like I'm in a different business than someone else or I'm different than them.
Right.
So I typically don't use that word. And when people on my team, you know, I don't correct them, but I might explain why are you segregating yourself?
Yeah. It's not really an attorney client, really. It is, but it's not a separate, you know, we're part of the same team.
It's just a little different.
Well, I always found that to be like just super interesting when they would say, I mean, I'd never asked, never inquired, and never talked about it. I mean, now we have the benefit of having you here and be able to do that. I found that the same, which is, you're part of the same, you're part of the business.
I never liked it because we're not like our law firm in the business, right? Where I'm there to help grow and make it happen. So, but everybody has a different feel.
I was just curious. Yeah,
cool.
Interesting.
And do you, we're starting to run out of time, but do you,
plus eight.
I have to do math. What is this? as an in-house lawyer, do you have occasion to hire lawyers and law firms outside? I mean, saying retain outside counsel.
Yeah, quite a bit.
I'm curious if you have advice since you're now the client in the room. And so we have a lot of lawyers listening. Any advice for law firms, lawyers who work with in-house lawyers?
Other than lower the...
lower your rates, right? We know that.
Bills. Okay. Yeah.
Some more practical advice. I mean, responsiveness is always important.
Yeah.
And it's not... If you can't get to something, say, hey, how about, you know, what's your timing? It's next week. Because there are times and sometimes someone won't get back to you for like a week after you sent an email and I'm busy and I don't always remember to follow up. And so
I'm sorry. I have to jump in on that.
Yeah.
You send an email to outside counsel and they don't respond for a week.
Sometimes this happened for a week.
You need to fire them. And that will never happen.
Oh, my God.
I don't think you have this. I have one firm in mind, but I do this type of work.
I won't say.
No, don't say.
But holy cow.
No, sorry. I had a conversation with partner.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a common courtesy.
That's major. Yes.
Right. If you're busy, like if you're in trial, you're busy, whatever. Hey, got your email. I'm going to divert it to somebody else because I can't give detention right now, but I will circle back with you towards the end of the week.
A plus response.
Right?
The initial response, which I think you'll laugh at, is the lawyer said, well, could you also send it to, there's like a group email within the firm?
No.
And I said, no, I'm not. I'm not going to remember.
You said that? Good.
Yeah, I said, I'm not going to remember to send it to some other group email. I know you. We hired you because of you. I know your name.
Oh my God, your name
easily comes up. Like I type in three letters and it comes up. I press OK, and I'm not doing anything more than that.
Oh, wow, so, that to me is such a model of inefficiency. Yes. Plus,
that's horrible.
Asking the client, can you just do my job for me?
Yes. Basically. Yeah.
And when I say my job, I mean forwarding an email. Like, are you kidding me? And like you're already sending an email. Why don't you just copy those people on the reply? I don't know. Anyway,
yeah. So responsiveness, which I think it sounds simple, but it's not everybody does it.
We talk about that a lot here, and we pride ourselves.
It's just acknowledging,
hey,
got your email,
24 hours,
whatever it is.
Yeah, mandated here, like within 24 hours.
Such a simple skill. Looks like you have more. Go for it.
Yeah, other things. I would obviously there's the legal advice, which that's why we're asking and we're coming to you. Then there's, how does it really work? What's the real issue? What's the real risk?
Like a practical impact, right? As opposed to just this legal.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not like, what I don't like is you get like this really long email with, you know, all the great, they spend a lot of time on it, obviously.
Overview.
But it's really long and it says everything, but it takes a long time to read through it, which no one wants to read all of it anyway. And then they don't even give necessarily a recommendation. And
you're hitting on all of our pet peeves here because we're always saying to the client, don't send the client an analysis and say, what do you think? They hired us to tell them what we think.
Right.
So give them a recommendation.
And if you have a couple of options and that's okay.
And make
that's
a recommendation.
Great. Yeah.
That's what you're looking for, right? Oh, yeah. You're with us. You're speaking our language.
Yeah.
That's
really important. And it's okay to say, even when you're on a phone call, I don't know right now. Let me check it out and get back to you.
Yeah.
Right.
So you don't need to there are people who always feel like they need to have the answer.
Right.
I'm okay with, hey, let me think about that. I never thought about that. Let me do some research or ask around. And I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
And not in, a week or 10 days.
Not in a week or 10 days.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Good stuff, Elliot. Really appreciate you sharing that advice. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Brett.
Thank you, Elliot.
Thank you, Brett. Hey, if you enjoyed this episode.
Thanks, Jeff.
I'm going to interrupt you while you're doing the readout. You must have enjoyed this episode.
Thanks, Nelson.
If you enjoyed this episode, let us know. You know how you can let us know? 5-star review.
Send us an email immediately.
Send us an email. Call Brett on his cell phone.
Call me.
Which is 305. Just kidding.
666-6666.
Wow. There you go.
There you go.
Should we end it? Nelson, anyway, if you like the show, please leave us a review, share the show, send it to your friends and family. Please follow us wherever you get your podcast. I'm just looking at Nelson because he's giving me the
end it here.
Nelson, thank you, Elliot, for having me. Thanks, Elliot.
Have a good weekend.
For more information on this show and other resources, visit FastAmeron.com and connect with us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram at FastAmeron.com.